Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Seattle, and regardless of where you are on the planet, I hope you're having a wonderful day. The purpose of Out of This World Radio is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. This is my fourth year for the program, and I want to thank everyone so much for their support and for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area and the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with over 100,000 listeners in over 60 countries. We have an incredible show for you today with some wonderful people and important messages. From 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time today, I'll be interviewing the wonderful Professor Gerald Pollack of the University of Washington. In my opinion, he's one of the world's most famous water scientists, and we'll be talking about his discovery of the fourth phase of water and the ability of water to store information in possibly a new organic computer, among other things. Then the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing my good friend Scott Lemriel. Scott, he's in the Los Angeles area, and he's been in touch telepathically and physically with benevolent extraterrestrials from the Galactic Alliance for the past 54 or 55 years. Scott will be giving information on the benevolent Galactic Alliance base that's inside Mount Shasta, California, and he'll also be coming on my wonderful spiritual trip to Mount Shasta from September 7th through the September 12th of 2017. We'll be going over that trip, and I hope you can all come. I want to thank everyone so much for their support for this program because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. And for those donating $25 or more today, I'll be happy to give them a brief psychic reading. I really appreciate your help and support because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. And with that, I'd like to thank my dear friends Faison and Shirley in Florida for their wonderful support, Anita in Dublin, Ireland, Marku in Helsinki, Finland, Emma Louise and Jan Eric in Norway, Randy and Jessica in Mercer Island, my good friend Darren in Olympia, and as well as Raj Shastri in Toronto, Canada, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness to make this planet a better place. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including the wonderful Crystal Voyage Bookstore in Tacoma, which I consider one of the best bookstores in Western Washington, and of course the wonderful Orion Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show, and any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services in over 60 countries. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol's designing my website and providing wonderful support, my friends in the Emoto office in Tokyo, Japan, and my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show and I know who are listening today, my angelic and earthly family, and of course KKNW, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I'd also like to thank Brooke Adams from Los Angeles, who've been suggesting new guests for my program. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I can also teach people how to contact their guides and angels. If you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones or passed on or contact your guides and get some good spiritual, hopefully good spiritual advice, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Or you can call me here in the United States on my cell at area code 509-750-9793 or toll free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. I believe in the power of prayer and good positive thoughts, and with that, I'd like to ask everyone around the world to please send lots of love and light, to Michiko Hayashi's mother, Masako, who suffered a stroke recently, and I wanted to let you know that your prayers and love and light to her have really helped, and she's since gone home, recuperating. She's doing much, much better. I'd also like to thank so much everyone for sending love and light to my good friend Orion, who was diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer about 3 or 4 months ago, and the cancer, the tumor itself has decreased by about 75% to 80%, and it's going away. The doctors are completely amazed because they had written him off, and he's instead has pursued some natural health remedies, but I know the most important thing has been your prayers and good thoughts, and I know that's really helped. Also, too, my friend Marco's mother, Louisa, had a stroke recently in Helsinki. If you could send some love and light to her, that would be nice, as well as Wally in the Olympia area and Dr. William Mount and my good friends John Irma in Olympia, Washington. That would be good. My book on messages from the masters, Cosmic Messages from Professor Albert Einstein, President Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, Nostradamus, Mahatma Gandhi, and Dr. Emoto, as well as the Galactic Alliance, is done. It will be published very, very soon, within the next 2 weeks. I will let you know as soon as it is published. And then I just wanted to check with my producer, Eric. Were we able to get that sound okay? Okay, great. And in honor of President Kennedy, I'd like to play this message that he asked me to play again today. It's just a couple of minutes long. It was an interview that I had with Judy Calley, actually my television show last week, but Jack Kennedy said it was so important we'd like to play it again just for a few minutes. Thank you, Eric.
Okay, here's John Kennedy. Here we go. My fellow Americans, it is with a twinge of disappointment that I can't be there in person with all of us in a circle holding hands, celebrating each other. I look at the level of what we call patriotism in our country. And I look at the way that we choose to view our responsibilities to not only our government, to our families. Your first priority is always to yourself. I don't mean that in a selfish way. I mean that everything begins and ends with you. So you need to take responsibility for the energy that you're sending out and for the way that it's being received, because that helps form the basis of your life. I tried as president to bring to mind social responsibility to our fellow brothers and sisters. And my messages always came from a soft spot in my heart, being grateful that I and my own family was blessed to come from a family that supported me. Not all have had that opportunity. Well, it's the same thing now with our government. You may not agree with everything that the current president does or does not do. But if you choose to send hateful, critical, unloving thoughts to him and his family, you're not helping to bring peace to the world. Whether you agree or disagree, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, or you're the Green Party, or you're non-decided, it does not matter. Each of you has a responsibility to your fellow human beings to be as clear as you can on the choices that you make. Support your country. You do not have to agree with everything. I would not ever suggest that you agree with everything. You're an individual. You're going to have your own perspectives and your own beliefs, and that's appropriate. But take the time to see the government flourishing and see the people flourishing and see the world flourishing and choose to see peace in everybody's heart. That is far more important than you sending any form of hate or disgust through the ethers. Be clear enough to send your support for what you choose. And what we are now working towards in the new paradigm is world peace. Choose peace. I am John F. Kennedy, and I think of myself as your brother. Thank you, Ted, for the invitation. And thank you, Judy, for caring enough to hear me clearly. in the way in which I wanted the message shared.
Thank you. Thank you, President Kennedy, and thank you so much, Judy, for giving us these messages. That's so beautiful of you.
I hope you enjoyed that message, those messages from President Kennedy. He asked me to play it again today. Also, I'd like to follow this up with a quick 1.5 minute message from a beautiful nature fairy named Twinkles, who also appeared last week when I was interviewing wonderful Judy Kelly from Los Angeles. Promised I'd bring this on. We'll just play this now, and then we'll go to Professor Pollack. Eric, if you could play that.
And she's sparkling, so let me ask her, Twinkles.
Okay.
Please walk gently on the earth. Please handle the life of nature with respect. We fairies paint the flowers and kiss the leaves and take care of the trees and hug the grass. And we want you to feel the love that goes into taking care of Mother Nature. I ask you to also take the responsibility to love Mother Nature and tread lightly and be careful when you chop or cut or destroy. Every part of nature serves a purpose. And I ask you to give thought before you remove a section of nature. How is it affecting the rest of the nature around it? This is Twinkles giving you a wink and letting you know that I'm here anytime to help you in any way to be of better service to Mother Nature. Ta-da!
Thank you so much, Twinkles. Thank you so much, Judy.
Wasn't that amazing? Now, with that, I'd like to go from Twinkles, the nature fairy, to Professor Jerry Pollack, who I consider one of the most wonderful and incredibly interesting water professors in the entire world. Jerry, welcome to Out of This World Radio.
Oh, thanks so much, Ted, and thank you for your undeserved accolades.
Well, I won't disclose on air how much you paid me to say that, but no, you didn't pay
me. Why not?
You paid me nothing to say it, so.
Well, anyway, it's great to be back with you again, Ted.
Yeah.
And thanks for playing that clip from President Kennedy. I could barely hear it, but the words that come through are, as usual, eloquent.
Oh, right. Well, I'm sorry you couldn't hear it very well. Maybe our telephone connection wasn't the best, but at any rate, he wanted me to play it again this on this show as well. And what I thought was really interesting is that he said to send good thoughts, positive thoughts, to our government and to people around the world, and send thoughts of peace to create a much better and happier world. And that's certainly a wonderful thing that everybody should do. And this is something, of course, that Dr. Emoto, Masaru Emoto, before he passed away in October of 2014, that was one of his research pillars, is that he found that consciousness does have an effect on water. And you have, too. You've done some wonderful research into the fourth phase of water. I'd like to talk a little bit about your research first, Jerry.
Yeah.
Now, most people think that water has, like, solid, like ice, liquid, like regular, like seawater or lake water, and a gaseous form, which is like cloud forms. But you found that there's one more step beyond that, and I'd love it if you could please explain it to my listeners.
Sure, yeah. So those three phases that have been obviously known since time memorial, and gradually, as people studied water, especially chemists and physicists, they began to realize that the properties of water are really weird. And starting with the idea of those three phases, it became more and more difficult to understand how these phases can explain the properties of water. And so what can't be explained are so-called anomalies, the water anomalies. Anomalies are observed observed features that don't fit into the framework of the current theory. And it happened, in fact, more than 100 years ago, Sir William Hardy, who obviously he must have been important because he has a sir before his name. But
right.
he was a famous physical chemist, a colloid chemist. And he began to realize the mounting anomalies or inconsistencies. And he suggested that we can't really explain all this with three phases of water. We need a fourth phase.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, that's where the idea of a fourth phase started. It was more than 100 years ago. And this idea was espoused from evidence by people no less than Albert St. George, and probably your listeners, most of your listeners don't know that name, but he was the father of modern biochemistry. He's a Hungarian guy who won a Nobel Prize. It was for discovering vitamin C. And he went on to study many more things, and including water. And mm-hmm. and he understood that water was critical for everything in life, and that there was something funny or different about water, especially water that existed inside the cell,
mm-hmm.
Where the idea was that maybe that water was somewhat different. And he said one of his many famous aphorisms, one is that life is water dancing to the tune of solids.
Wow.
So he, I mean, the father of modern biochemistry, espoused the idea that there's some kind of special water that exists inside the cell,
mm-hmm.
maybe similar to what Sir William Hardy was talking about, and that its behavior was critically important to all of central to all of biology. And that's an idea that, in some sense, has not taken hold among modern scientists. What takes hold now is that water is, well, pretty boring. Water is like, it's like the, you know, the tub, the bath that
sure.
bathes the more important molecules of life, and
right.
and if we don't pay much attention to it, it's okay because it's not very important.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so that's yeah. the background, and
mm-hmm.
and so we discovered, first of all, in a book that I wrote in 2001 called Cells, Gels, and the Engines of Life,
mm-hmm.
I brought up the evidence that had been accumulating over the years that water played an absolutely central role in everything that the cell does.
Sure.
And the idea was that the water inside the cell was actually ordered like a liquid crystal. And there had previously been not only the two people I mentioned, but Gilbert Ling, a scientist originally from China, chosen from among all the people in China to come to the U.S., the first cohort after World War II, one of whom won the Nobel Prize in Physics. And
mm-hmm.
many, they thought that Gilbert Ling was probably the cleverest among the three. He hasn't won a Nobel Prize. He's 98 years old. He's written seven books.
I
don't know, all dealing with the idea that the water inside the cell, even outside the cell, is ordered water. It's not like water that you drink in a glass where the molecules are bouncing around an incredible number of times per second, but it,
sure.
this is more like, you know, like soldiers organized and marching together. See, so his ideas had a real impact on my thinking, and
mm-hmm.
and so we began looking into the properties of this kind of water, and we found the results we found in the laboratory starting around 2002 were absolutely astonishing.
Wow.
And so that's what led to the so-called fourth phase of water. And this fourth phase, just to revert back to all of these anomalies, many of these anomalies can be explained by this fourth phase. So let
mm-hmm.
me just tell you just a few words about what is the fourth phase. So the fourth phase, first of all, is ordered.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it's charged. And third, it builds next to some kinds of surfaces, almost most surfaces, so-called hydrophilic surfaces. So what's hydrophilic? Hydro is water. Philic means love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's surfaces that love water. And so what happens is if you have one of these surfaces lying on your desk and you drop little water on it, the water spreads out because the surface loves the water.
Well,
as opposed to like Teflon or something, which is hydrophobic, fears water, and so the water just bunches up into a little sphere and avoids any contact with the surface. So when water meets a hydrophilic surface, what happens is it orders, it gets charged, and there's a lot of it. We found in our experiments in the laboratory, it's not a trivial, it's not just the boundary, the very boundary of the water that meets the surface. It's actually up to millions of molecular layers. I would say that it's macroscopic, although we do use microscopes to look at it, but it builds sometimes to as much as half a millimeter even. So it's a lot of water that undergoes this transformation. Those are some of the characteristics. And another point you didn't ask, but I'll tell you anyway.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
In order to build order, it's commonly known that you have to put in energy to build that build order. And the question, you know, it started early on when we're trying to figure out where does that energy come from, because this fourth phase, as I mentioned, is not only is ordered, but also it's charged. And in order to build up those, you need energy from somewhere. And we couldn't figure it out. Obviously, you can't plug it in to the socket the way you'd plug in your cell phone battery. And so it's got to come from somewhere. And finally, we figured it out. It was a kind of chance experiment done by a student who was supposed to be doing something else. But, you know, sometimes undergraduate students, they have imagination and they like to explore. Yeah, right. And so, good for them. So we had a chamber sitting on the desk, some kind of surface. I can't remember. It was either a polymer material or it was a gel, something that had a hydrophilic surface, and we could see this exclusion zone growing and building up, and we could tell actually how big it is because we put microspheres, little tiny particles, in the water, and this fourth phase excludes those particles, you see, so there's a zone of exclusion, and we measure the size of that zone, and we can tell how big this fourth phase zone is, and we even call it exclusion zone, or EZ, which is easy to remember. So fourth phase, EZ, the two are more or less interchangeable, and so please pardon me if I interchange them without even thinking.
Sure.
So the student had this chamber, and he could see the EZ. And he took a lamp that was right next to it, one of these gooseneck lamps, and he shined the lamp on the chamber just, you know, for fun. And he saw what he never expected. This exclusion zone grew enormously, and it grew in the region that was illuminated, not any other region. So quickly it became pretty clear to us that the energy that's needed for building this zone comes from light. And then we did many experiments, which color, which wavelength, and we found it was mostly infrared light that builds this. And, you know, infrared has a wavelength a little longer than red. And we found 3 micrometers or such is what built it, like, you know, leaps and bounds. It was so powerful. Even a weak light could do this. So this light... infrared light is all around us all the time. It's hard to get rid of. Everything is generating infrared light. And so the energy for building this stuff is always there. And therefore, the EZ, or the fourth phase, is always there. And so, and it just finally, it's a long answer to your short question, but getting back to you and me, our bodies are filled with this stuff.
Sure.
And how do we know that? Well, for several reasons, one of which is that inside our cells, are various solid molecules, almost all of which are hydrophilic, have hydrophilic surfaces, and this is exactly the kinds of surfaces that build this kind of water. And also, interestingly, the cell is negatively charged. This water is negatively charged. It doesn't prove that the negative charge comes from the water, but it's a very easy connection between the two. So there's more, but I don't want to get into it. You asked me, what is the fourth phase? So an answer to a simple question, I've given you a mini lecture.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Well, that's the beauty of radio, because you can be spontaneous, You can talk about all kinds of things. And one of the things I wanted to also run by you, I interviewed Master Lin recently in Taiwan. And do you remember he was at, you both were wonderful people at my Galactic Wisdom Conference earlier this year in Olympia.
Oh, I remember him well. He came to dinner at my home.
Yeah. And one of the things that I picked up in listening to him talk is that he said that there were six phases of water. And when pressed, I was just kind of overhearing this conversation. He said that the other phases beyond fourth or fifth and sixth were actually variations of easy water. He had just classified them into different types. I actually interviewed him recently. I'll be playing that interview probably a week from today. It's Dr. Moto's birthday a week from tomorrow. I plan to have a special program with Michiko. Michiko Hayashi will be on briefly, but I'd like to have a program dedicated to Dr. Moto. But Master Lin talked about the six phases of water. And the other interesting thing I wanted to throw out to you is that during the Atlantean times, I've gotten this from several sources of people on my show, especially a gentleman named Matthias Di Stefano from Argentina, who has very detailed and vivid memories of living in Atlantis. And he's an incredible guy. He's like 28, 29 years old, Jerry, but he has memories of living in Atlantis thousands and thousands of years ago. And one of the reasons why we as a civilization haven't found any written records of the Atlanteans is because they use advanced water storage through what he called, it was like easy water. Like the cells in your body, cells in a person's body are basically memory storage devices on a biological method way. And what the Atlanteans did, they had organic water-based computers which used the extra oxygen molecules or like an H3O2.
Well, H3O2 would be the structure of this fourth phase.
Okay,
right?
Okay, yeah. That's what I got from the other side. But it was H3O2 that they used this as a way for water storage, and it was vastly. I remember we talked about that on my television interview with you last week, which will be coming out soon on YouTube. But it was incredible the amount that you could store, which would completely revolutionize. It would be like comparing a bow and arrow to a shotgun. I mean, the efficiency, the memory storage using organic-based computers would be incredible.
Absolutely, and right on. And I guess it's no surprise that other cultures have identified this millennia ago,
right.
Or even beyond. So let me explain about this memory storage because I think it's. It's true, and I think you're right that that in the future, at least in our civilization, this may actually come about and may have incredible impact on computers and hardware and software too. So it comes from this fourth phase of water, and we know the structure of this fourth phase. It's in my book, the evidence for it, called "The Fourth Phase of Water," is the book, and it looks like sheets that are stacked upon one another, and each sheet has the shape of a honeycomb, a lot of hexagons together,
wow.
And these sheets are stacked and piled on one another, and with a pile of sheets, you get this zone that is the EZ or the fourth phase. So each one of these sheets, the hexagons are for the points, the vertices of the hexagons are actually oxygen atoms with the hydrogens in between each pair of oxygens, and they're very closely packed, and it's a kind of semi-solid. So these molecules don't move around a whole lot. They occupy this structure, and the structure is semi-permanent. In fact, my colleagues in Italy have actually solidified this fourth phase of water at room temperature. So it's
really
kind of incredible. You have a solid water of some type at room temperature. And I've felt this stuff, and I have a sense of what it feels like as a solid. But anyway, the main point is that it's got a lot of oxygens that are packed very closely together in a grid, in a very regular array. It's very similar to a digital computer memory, which has silicon molecules that are organized similarly in a regular array. And of course, the way the digital computer memory works is that each one of these these silicons or silicon dioxide, I can't ever recall. Anyway, they're addressed, and they have one state or another state, 0, 1, on, off, whatever. It's a binary system, and from those you can build up to information. So the easy water is similar. It's got the oxygens that are closely packed in a regular array, and the what's really exciting about the water idea, water memory, water array, is first of all the molecules are very closely packed, more than in the computer. But more important even is that the oxygen has not two states; it's not binary, but actually can have five different states. So these are the so-called oxidation states, and you can have -2, which is the most common one that we know for oxygen, and -1, and 0, and even +1 and +2. So imagine the amount of memory if each entity had not two states but five different states.
Oh, and, yeah.
Absolutely. So if you can figure out how to address individual ones, and nobody's figured that out yet, at least as far as I know, then you have what you like to call an organic memory. I would say it's a water memory. And this is really exciting because I think there's a future to this. And the reason I think that is not just what I mentioned a moment ago, but there's a lot of evidence that water has the capacity to store information. And, of course, that goes to Emoto and his stuff, but also, you know, beyond Emoto, We hold conferences each year. It's called the Annual Conference on the Physics, Chemistry, and Biology of Water. And it used to be held in Vermont. Now it's held in Bulgaria. It's a really interesting meeting, and I invite all your listeners who might be interested. It just look under Water Conference, waterconf.org, and CONF, and you'll find the website. It's in October, and we have coming this year, some really interesting people. Luc Montagnier won the Nobel Prize. He's presenting on, well, basically information in water. Many people come to our conference and make presentations that have to do with the memory of water. Now, so this is now, at least in the 100 or plus people who come to our conference each year, I think it'll be more this year, it's a kind of fact that this is real. And so and the water that's inside your body that stores this kind of information is easy water. It's almost all easy water because every water molecule is so close to one of these hydrophilic surfaces that this is inevitable. So there is evidence that this kind of water can store information. Many people present that. And we sort of understand how this might happen. The final link about addressing individual atoms is not yet clear, but many people, including ourselves, are working on this. So it's very exciting, and I think this is the frontier, and especially the frontier in medicine, because this information has got to play some important role in cell function. We know that. It's just a matter of working out exactly what that is. So getting back to Master Lin and the six phases, I'm not sure about the six. Some people talk about different phases of ice and consider that as the evidence that water has not three or four phases or six phases, but many. But discounting that, it's possible that what Master Lin is talking about is the fact that the generic easy lattice, which we've elaborated in my book and various lectures, that can be modified by information. So you put information in from outside, and it changes that the atoms inside of the easy water. And so the easy water, the generic structure, is thereby modified. It contains some information that's different from the generic. And maybe he's right. It could be modified in only a couple of different ways, giving you six different phases. But my guess is that the number of possible modifications is probably pretty large.
Well, Master Lin's interview will likely be played a week from today in honor of Dr. Moto. I'm so glad you talked about that, Jerry, because it's interesting for me to listen to this. And I guess the overwhelming lesson, too, is that reality is a lot more than just on the surface, isn't it?
Isn't it? Totally. You know, and that's why we're doing research. And just let me mention about Dr. Emoto and the information, you know, that he's reported. And I think we have an understanding or a basis for understanding how that might come about. Now, you know, most scientists reject Emoto's findings out of hand because, first of all, they think it's impossible that water is capable of storing information. And for scientists, the basis of that is the understanding that water molecules are randomly disposed, and they're moving around, bouncing it around at a humongous number of times per second. How on earth could a substance with those properties store information?
Right.
And then, you know, it's reasonable. However, for the easy water, that doesn't apply because the molecules are stable and they're organized, and so there is a basis for storage of information. And so I kind of got interested in what Emoto had to say. And the funny thing is we met on an interview. Someone decided it would be really interesting to put together a spiritual guy, Emoto, and a scientific guy, myself. And we had a nice, it was a two-hour interview. And then I invited him to dinner at my home next time he's in the Seattle area. And unfortunately, he passed a few weeks before that dinner. So we never did get to meet, but it's nice to have gotten to know all the people who are associated with Dr. Emoto, and you know, get to know these truly wonderful, wonderful people, yourself included.
Let me get back to.
I think we have evidence for an understanding of what Emoto's figures might or ice structures, an underlying rationale for how this could come about. We don't know that they do come about, and it's really very simple. And what it is that in order for water, where the molecules are bouncing around enormously rapid rates, in order for that to convert into ice, we found it's necessary to go through an intermediate phase. You don't go directly from water to ice. You go from water to easy water to ice. See, and if you melt the ice, you go from ice to easy water to water. Okay, so the easy phase is a necessary intermediate state. And we know, as I mentioned, that this intermediate state can store information. So for us, it's no surprise that if the water is in that intermediate state and some kind of information comes in, I haven't a clue as to the nature, but it could be, for example, infrared radiation that all of us are generating. If that infrared radiation contains information, we most assume it's not, it's bland, but it might, see? And if it does, then that information is imparted to the easy water, which then, when it freezes, will reflect that information. And so you could get different formations depending on the energy that's being put into the water, see? So this is the exciting thing, that I can't stand up and wave a flag and say that every one of Dr. Emoto's observation is scientifically proven, but what I can say is that there's a basis for it.
Right, right. Well, one of the things I'll be doing to honor Dr. I have to be careful, Emoto, Emoto, because there's a scientist over in who works in the Emoto office in Tokyo. His name is Nemoto, so I have to be careful, say Emoto or Nemoto.
Oh, it's very easy, because Nemoto is not Emoto.
Right, right. Okay, well, that makes perfect sense. But there was something magical about the number 144,000. People or something, and there was a what I'll be doing is bringing on, I'm still putting the show together, but to honor Dr. Emoto, I'll be bringing on Michiko Hayashi, the Modal Peace Project, but also some psychics with messages from Dr. Emoto. I had a psychic named Julie Kelly, who's very good, from Los Angeles, contact him last week, and I was going to play his messages today, but I'm going to wait till next week. And I know you're a busy fellow, Jerry, but you're welcome to come on the show. This would be just brief, about maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes or so, if you got time, a week from today. It'll be in honor of Dr. Emoto, and I want to get ideas for your research and others out there in the scientific community who are interested in water and get messages from him from the other side as to research areas you might want to pursue. And that actually brings me to my next issue before I forget. Your laboratory is one of the best in the world, Jerry. It does things nobody else does. I don't know of any other laboratory like yours in the world. Are there any other laboratories in the United States, for example, or Canada? Or is that a leading question? You can take
a degree of humility here.
You can take the Fifth Amendment if you want.
I don't know, but I do think that what we're doing is unique.
It's important. And that's the reason I'm saying that, and one of the reasons I had you on today. You're kind of like the Professor Einstein of water in the world, and yet your the funding for your laboratory is due to end soon, and I can't believe we as an American public and the world would allow something like that to happen, to suddenly one day you come up to your lab and it says closed due to funding. And I don't think the people of the world want that to close. That's why I wanted to have you on today, to make a call for action for people to do a couple different things. They can make a tax deductible contribution to your laboratory so you can be recognized for your wonderful work. And how do people do that? Do they send you an email? Do they come up to your door with a briefcase full of cash and just hand it to you, or how do they do that?
A briefcase full of cash. Wow.
Yeah, right. Unmarked bills. Yeah.
Well, I'd be tempted then to put that into my own pocket instead of my laboratory. If it's a briefcase full of cash, marked bills or unmarked.
Unmarked, of course, in small denominations.
No, seriously. I think many of your listeners understand that. Scientists who deviate from the mainstream have a problem getting money because it's the leaders of the mainstream approach who make the decisions on the government committees as to who gets the money. So you put it in the application. It's like you have an idea that the Earth is round, but all the scientists know that the Earth is flat, and you come through with a proposal and say, hey, look, I've got some preliminary evidence that the Earth is round. I've seen some satellite pictures, and it looks awfully round, not flat. And I took off from Seattle, and I went west, and I got to Tokyo, and I kept going and going and going, and I didn't see the edge of the Earth. Instead, I got right back to Seattle. So please give me some more money because, I need to do more studies to check this out. So it goes to whatever science organization there is, and the gatekeeper says, oh, this looks pretty important, and I should get the experts in the field of the shape of the Earth to look it over really carefully to see if it's okay. So who are these experts? Well, they're the flat Earth, the leaders of the flat Earth society, or paradigm,
right.
And your chances of getting money vanish. Every scientist knows this. There are many who have really interesting ideas, and they understand that if they propose those ideas, they won't get money. Well, if they don't get money, their lab closes. And so there's a lot of pressure for people to follow along the mainstream and not deviate. And for me, I'm interested in seeking truth, and you never know where that is going to lead you. And so we've uncovered some really interesting and profound, and I think rather fundamental findings. And they've proved rather popular. The book is really popular, and all kinds of awards and prizes and such. But the money just doesn't come.
I think you need to be supported. And this is something we actually talked about last year, where Dr. Emoto found that with radioactive water, and I'm thinking about Fukushima, and also Hanford here in the United States, with radiation problems from that nuclear facility, what he found back in, I think it was 1993 or 99, I can't remember the date, but he took a bottle of radioactive water from a nuclear reactor in Japan that had an accident, and he just wrote the words love and gratitude and put some crystal pictures on the bottle of water from love and gratitude. And Jerry, within 48 hours, that radiation was gone.
That's amazing.
And that's one of the things which our scientists are, I don't see them doing it, but our scientists could do here at Hanford to clean up Hanford, which is a huge problem of radiation from leaking these from the reactors there, also with Fukushima. But I remember what we talked about last year on when I interviewed you, and we both thought that the major stumbling block was not so much of writing love and gratitude on the Fukushima reactors to get rid of the radiation. The problem was with the traditional scientists and engineers who refused to open their ideas to new ideas, a little bit like Galileo back in the 16th century Italy, who tried to burn him at the stake for proposing that the Earth was not the center of the universe. So those solutions are out there to help humanity and clean up radiation on the planet. And we are also very powerful spiritual beings. And with that, what I'd like to do is everyone listening today worldwide to contact President Donald Trump and tell him that Jerry Prolick's lab at the University of Washington should be funded by public dollars.
Well,
I'm serious. If he can spend over $100 million firing missiles at a base in Syria 2 months ago that was unoccupied, he can spend a couple of million dollars to keep your lab going, because it's doing the research that nobody else is doing. And with that, I want to give out the telephone numbers for President Trump. If you'd like to call his office, his direct number is area code 202-456-1111. And 1111, by the way, is an angelic number. His address, if you want to write him a letter, is the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20500. If you want to send them an email, it's very simple. You go to their website at www.whitehouse.gov/contact/. There's an email form, and you can talk it. You don't need a tremendous amount of money, but you do need some to continue your work. And also, too, how can people contact you to make a donation?
Yeah, I think the easiest way is by email. And,
okay.
I'll give my email, because it's not very complicated. It's GHP, that is for Gerald Harvey Pollack, GHP, at U dot Washington, spelled out, dot EDU.
Okay, wonderful. That's pretty easy.
It's simple. And it's easy to find if anybody wants to and loses it. My email is all over the internet. It's not a secret, though. It's pretty easy to find.
Sure.
And I would really appreciate contributions are really most welcome, because in order to continue the work, we really need it to depend on private donations. Otherwise, as you said, things may close down. Without funding, you can't really do anything. Supporting a postdoctoral fellow, for example, for a year, cost $50,000 plus fringe benefits. You're up to about $70,000, and you need a few of these people to begin to do the experiments that need to get done. So,
right.
It's a challenge. Thank you for bringing that up. And any donation, any amount is hugely appreciated, and it is best email contact, and I can easily give details. It's not complicated at all.
Okay. Well, I'll give that email out again, Jerry. It's ghp@u.washington.edu. And I want to thank everyone around the world who's listening today, who've been supporting my radio show now and in the past and the future, because without your help, I couldn't continue to broadcast. This is actually our fourth year now on Out of This World Radio, and the purpose of the program is to make this world a better place, and I can't think of anyone better than you, Jerry.
Very kind, Ted.
It's scientists like you doing the research that you have been doing. If you hadn't been doing the research that you are doing, people like you in the past, we would have never had anyone like Professor Albert Einstein or Galileo or Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci. All these famous scientists it's always tough, I think, breaking into a new paradigm and opening up people's minds to new ideas which could really help humanity. It's happened so many times in human history, you almost expect it. But I hope that President Trump has the courage to really put put his support where his mouth is when he talks about making the world a better place. Because your laboratory does things that no other laboratory does in the world, and it's something that really needs to be supported, and you're not asking for a lot of money.
No. We're just a modest amount enough to keep things going, so
right.
We can pursue those
right.
areas in question that are really so critically important.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I got a little off track, but I wanted to mention that today regarding the funding because it is important to,
I appreciate it. And I just want to mention one more thing. I know we're running out of time soon. But
okay, we've got 6 minutes.
Yeah. But also health. Today we've got a problem with health. The chronic issues are getting worse with
right.
each passing year. And
sure.
And unfortunately, conventional medicine has a limited number of tricks up its sleeve in dealing with these. And it's really disconcerting that. But see, it's possible from what we've discovered since we understand what the role of water inside the cell. It's possible that actually water, a fourth phase water, could be that magic wonder drug that if treated in the right way, could reverse pathologies and make people well.
And oh, absolutely.
This is no idle talk. We have experiments that we've begun. We need many more experiments, and, of course, that's the reason for getting support. But we know that this easy water is inside the cell and that it participates in everything that the cell does. So inside the cell are proteins, and what
right.
typical cell does is done by the proteins. They go from one state to another. They fold. They go from some extended state to a folded state. You can imagine
right.
folding like a
right.
pretzel.
Wow.
And then
wow.
they go back again and so on. But, see, what we found is that it's not just the protein that folds. It's the water that surrounds the protein, the easy water that always surrounds each protein that's involved in this folding of the protein. If you don't have enough of that, the protein finds itself in a strange environment and doesn't know how to fold, so it misfolds. And if it misfolds, then your muscle is not contracting.
Wait.
Pardon me?
You found out this incredible research that could have tremendous health benefits for humanity on this planet. Has the medical community stepped forward and offered any support for your laboratory, given your findings?
Enormous. Some. The conventional medical community, no.
Right.
Hands off, mostly. But the alternative and complementary community
right.
is the opposite.
Right.
They've really embraced it. They understand not only the role of water, but the role of light.
Sure.
I mentioned earlier that light is what builds this water, and that you need this water, otherwise you're dehydrated. You need to build it.
Wow.
And so we understand now what can build this water, and they're actually They're simple expedients that
mm-hmm,
do it.
Mm-hmm.
The most obvious one that comes to mind, there are half a dozen of them,
uh-huh.
is light, and
wow.
infrared light.
Beautiful.
So you shine infrared light. Maybe you've had the experience, Ted, that
mm-hmm.
going into a sauna.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in, you may feel tired and achy or whatever, and you come out and you feel like $1 million.
Right.
And it's really good. And
right.
So with the sauna is heat. And heat
right.
basically translates into infrared radiation or infrared light.
Interesting.
Right, exactly. And so this is what builds the easy water in your body. And so it's really easy to understand the therapeutic effect of infrared. And I found among my colleagues who are doing alternative and complementary medicine that more and more they're using infrared light.
I got an idea. Mitch Kohayashi is flying in for some conferences back to the United States, I believe in August, and she's asked me to organize a presentation for her on the Hado machine. It's called the Katsuzama system, and of course Dr. Moto, before he passed, said that everything's Hado, everything's vibration, so that if you use water as a way to, you can set the vibrations correctly for like a bottle of water, you can use that to reset the vibrations in your body from a diagnostic perspective, to really help you with any health condition or spiritual condition. And she'd like to give a presentation on that, and maybe you could join forces with her. I don't know what your schedule's like early September, but it would be nice, and maybe invite some people from the medical community, too, over to see her.
Oh, let's discuss it offline. I'm actually scheduled to be in Tbilisi, Georgia, in early, but I'm still not. I'm not. No, they're interested. They've got some really interesting wines that they produce, and they're interested in knowing whether the quality of their wines has anything to do with easy water.
Oh, how funny.
It might.
Could you bring back a couple of bottles? I'd like to taste it just to verify that it's good tasting, you know, as a research project.
I think I need to bring a suitcase that I can check. I usually don't because bringing back some wines from there is going to be really important.
Jerry, we've got about 20 seconds left, and I want to thank you. This has been so much fun to have you on today. And again, everyone, please write President Trump and email him and say that Jerry's laboratory is worth it, and I hope you can fund it. Jerry, have a wonderful day, and thank you again so much for coming on.
Okay. Thank you, Ted. It's always a great pleasure.
All right. Take care. We'll be back on the air in just a few minutes, friends.